Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot is daf Yud Beis, and we are getting deeper into some of the more esoteric elements that we had just been merames to at the beginning of the Masechet. So you remember that the Mishnah made a big fuss about there being 15 and only 15. He repeated it, first of all, just made the number. But you remember, what the heck do we need? I mean, we know how to count. It said 15, and then it repeated Harei Elu, that it's a din specifically in those 15, and you shouldn't have a Hava Mina to add. Now, at the beginning of the Masechet, we wanted to know, so what is that coming to tell me? I mean, what would I think to add? And at that point, we already hinted at the four cases that we're dealing with here. We've started dealing with some of them. So we had the case of the Tzoras Seita. We had a case of a Tzoras Machzir Grushato. We had a case of a Tzoras Eilanis. And we had a case of a Tzorat Mima in it. All of those cases we're going to talk about. Some of them we've already spoken about. But remember, there were also other issues that even before we got to that, we had a long conversation between Levi and Rebbe as to why do we really say that there are only 15? Can't we make it 16? And we even added Sat to say that there were 17. So that basically we've been working around this issue. Now, because we've been working around this issue, it involved us in getting a deeper understanding of what exactly the situation is in a case where there is no mitzvah of Yibum, not because of the status of Arayas, but because of some other element, so that the woman perhaps was Asura on her own husband because she was a Saita, or perhaps she had been Magzi Grushasa after she had been married to somebody else. And then we're even, and have already actually discussed, according to Rabbi Shimon and the Litzror, we've discussed cases in which it's possible that there's a ptur from Yibum, or at least an isser in doing Yibum, through the actual mechanisms that were put into place for Yibum itself, through the Zika of Yibum. And all of this started us thinking, it started the Gemara trying to working out whether the situation of a tzora of an erva in a place where there is what remains is only the iser of eshes ach. This was the big conundrum in the Masechta from the beginning. What is the real relationship of iser ach to the mitzvah yibum? And is iser ach a ptur from yibum in the event that it isn't coupled to the mitzvah of yibum? And therefore, if the tzora remains an iser of eshes ach, is it therefore by definition that she is an erva herself, which would include the din of tzoras tzora, or is that itself a new chiddush hakro because of the pasuk of litzor? All of these questions are interrelated because they all boil down to a deeper understanding. What is the real meaning of the relationship of eshet ach to Yibum? Does Eshet Ach remain a standard Erva? And furthermore, we're going to see there's even a bigger question. Is the din of Yibum dependent on the Isser of Eshet Ach, or is it only dependent on the fact of Eshet Ach? Now, that would be an astounding issue. Because if the fact is that we're looking at the need to be Mekim Shem La'achim, the need to be Mekim Shem La'achiv happens to break into an Isser D'oraisa, which is called Eshet Ach. That's one way of looking at it. But the other way of looking at it is that in the Yisod of the nature of Arayas lies the Chiyav that Erva provides for the interrelationship of reproductive issues when it comes to the responsibilities of Kirva, as opposed to the Isurim of Kirva. Because remember, genetics work both ways. We try to have a broader gene pool, but the fact is that the interrelationship of the selfish gene, so to speak, in which you are mechuyev to see to it, that the closer the relationship to you is in terms of genetics, the more responsibility you have. And this, of course, is a biological reality. This is not just because there's Xeris HaKosu, but it's the fact that you can analyze even mathematically how many visits there will be to a sick member of any organism's social structure, depending on the number of shared genes. And these are incredible issues. So then the shaila is, what if there wouldn't be an iser of eshetach, but she would still be an eshetach? You ask, how is that possible? It's very possible. There are very simple ways to avoid the problem of eshetach completely if you hold that ein iser chal al iser. So then the question would be, what would be the status of an eshetach that isn't oser because of eshetach, because she was already previously oser because she was an erva? These are like incredible questions. Would there still be a din of yibum in that case? Obviously, you couldn't carry out the yibum because the erva would potter you from the yibum. But then the shaila is, would there be a din of tzara? You can see how incredibly complex and intertwined all of these issues are. So we've begun touching on some of them, starting with the whole conversation with Levi and Rebbe and what kind of issues the Mishnah is willing to touch on. We've actually noted that the Mishnah is actually of limited, in terms of universality, it's a limited description because it's not taking into consideration cases of de, or cases where the brother himself was only a brother because of Appalachian brotherhood and so on, but nonetheless, it's still a brother. Okay, so we understand that. But then we got into the issue of what happens when there's a relationship to the husband that doesn't allow the husband himself to be married to her, whether that would also impact on the tzara. So those were the questions of Ma'aseh Grushasa and the Din of Aseita. And in fact, would that Kal V'chomer itself, that is saying, well, if the brother himself who was deceased wasn't allowed to be married to this woman, it doesn't make sense that the Torah would be makbid to continue that kiddushin by having another brother take over. What would be the impact on the tzara of those types of circumstances? That was what we had discussed yesterday. Now, today we have the same discussion about the four missing cases, remember, four missing cases from the Mishnah that we brought up, the Tzaras Seita, and the Tzaras Eilenes, and the Tzaras Mima Enes, and the Tzara of Ma'aseh Grushasa. So we've dealt with two of them so far. We have not dealt with the din of the Tzaras Mima Enet, and we have not dealt with the din of Tzaras Eilenes. So that's what we're going to be dealing with today. So we had gotten up to Yud Beis Amud Aleph. It's really important to recognize that the Seder of the Masechet has been very, very clear. This is not, you shouldn't get confused by all of the issues that we're bringing up, because they're being brought up directly in the Seder that the Mishnah brings things up. And it's very, very clear. So we start off with the analysis of those 15 women and why particularly 15, and that we looked ahead to the Mishnah that we're going to have later, which is the Mishnah about the Shesh Nashim Chamurot. Then we ask why it is we have this particular number stressed, and that brought us to the four cases that we're dealing with now. And then we spoke about why do we not include other cases, which got us into the issue of whether Anus as Aviv is actually Aser or Mutter, which led to the question of, do we discuss Machlokas in here or do we not discuss Machlokas in here? And then we went directly to discuss the interrelationship of this is the beginning of discussion, the interrelationship of the Tzara and the Erva in cases where it's not Erva, but it's similar to Erva possibly because the Torah uses the word Tum'ah, such as the Ma'aseh Grushato, or Tum'ah, such as the Seita. This was dependent on the machlokas of whether the Parsha Ma'aseh Grushato is in fact talking about a Ma'aseh Grushato like Rav Yosef Ben Kippur, or whether it actually flipped in the middle to be discussing the Tzaras Seita, which created a new Isser of Tuma. So that was an idea of extended Erva because of the comparison to Tuma. So that's where we had gotten up to. And the discussion initially had pointed out that there were four such cases that the Mishnah was coming to be Mamayit. And now we're talking about the two of those four cases after having discussed the issue of Tuma or the Kal V'chomer that a woman is Asura to her husband would also be Asura per Aser, perhaps the Tzora, because she remains as an Eishes Ach. So now we're going to go on to discuss this brand new concept, which doesn't draw so simply on the issues that we've spoken about until now. And in fact, the din of Mima'enes that we're about to get into is a rather strange extension of the Darabonan. Before we begin, let's note that there's two issues that we have to think about in a Mima'enes. Now, the reason that we're talking about Mima'enes over here all the way at the end is because that was the closing of the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says, in all of the above cases, if a divorce took place prior to the death of the husband, so then the erva is not going to fall to Yibam. And then the Mishnah said, and the same thing would be true if it was a ketana who was mima'enet in her husband. And at least that's what it seemed to mean. She was mima'enet in her husband, and therefore they were never married, and therefore there's no tsaras erva. It would be the same thing as if the erva had died before, or the erva was mitgareshet before, or the erva is mima'enet before, right? That's how we read the Mishnah. We're now at that closing line, or almost at the closing line, because we still have to think about v'iyata yecholomar b'chamoto v'im chamoto, that they were islandesses, or that they had been mima'enes. We're still going to get to that issue and see why that's absolutely true. And that will bring us to the next Mishnah. So we're almost at the end of understanding fully this Mishnah, and you should not feel at some kind of loss that we've been throwing all kinds of issues at you. We haven't. We've been very, very consistent and very clear. So what we need to think about with the Mima'enet is, although we sort of took for granted when we were mafarish the Mishnah, that when it says if the erva was grusha before the death of her husband, so then she doesn't affect the yibum. And if the erva was mima'enet, we assume that that meant was mima'enet before the death of her husband. But does it necessarily mean that? I mean, obviously, if she was mima'enet before, then she would be the same as a grusha. I mean, even better, because a mima'enet is an annulment of the marriage. So it's as if they were never even married, right? So the question is the Mishnah adding something by telling us the case of mima'enet? If it tells us the case of grusha, perhaps what the Mishnah is adding is that the mima'enet can be mima'enet even after the death of the brother. Because look, we have this concept called zika, remember, which we discussed when we had the discussion with Ira. So this idea of zika, where the Torah essentially maintains the original marriage until there's a resolution by one of the particular participants, one of the surviving wives and one of the surviving brothers, they resolve the outstanding issue of the genetic demand for making sure that these genes are not lost. That's the Vahaya Bukhara Asher Teled and so on, right? So the question is, even if the marriage was dissolved normally by death, in this case, it is not dissolved by death because the Torah continues the Zika. Look at this. You see the Chochmah of Zun. The Rebbe and the Gabbai are both put together, and both of them utilize this new idea of being in semi-darkness so as to both be there and not be there. It's mamish, it's nispoil to be at the level of artificial intelligence here, in which everything is thought out. I think it was Ruach HaKodesh, if I didn't know better. Anyway.
It calls for a drink.
Yes, so now the Shaila is, can she be mima'enet on the Zika? Well, that's a different question. Does she need to be mima'enet on the Zika? Of course she doesn't need to be mima'enes on the Zika. And it's absurd to talk about it. What she would be doing with mima'enet in that case is that she would still be able to be mima'enet by annulling the original marriage to the deceased husband that made her zikuka, right? There's no such thing as a mion to the Zika. The Zika was a result of that original marriage. So if she's currently able to be mima'enet, it means that whatever it is that created that bond, which remember is a dirabonan by definition, a mima'enet is only mima'enet when the kedusha was not d'oraisa. A mima'enet was a mode that the rabbanan put into effect in marriages which are only there in order to protect a child from predators. So what was it the Rabbanan did to protect that child? Wouldn't be viewed today as much of a protection. They gave her the right to have a husband. So she may only be 6 years old, but that is her protection. So who can make her married at that age? Anybody that is not her father. If her father would have married her off, there would be a deraisa. But if her father died, or if her father loses rights over her by having once married her off, and now she, or sold her as a shivcha, in any of those events, when she gets out of that situation, the father no longer has rights over her. So then it is possible for her to be Mekabelas Kedushin, for her brother to be Mekabelas Kedushin, for the mother to be Mekabelas Kedushin, whatever those cases we'll be talking about later. But the bottom line is that in order to prevent her from being a sexual object to the public, we provided her a husband. So you'll say, okay, but you know, that husband could be a pretty rotten predator himself. What's to protect her from that? That's miyun. The Rabbanan said, look, if she doesn't like the guy for whatever reason, all she has to do is walk out of the house and say, I don't like him. And that cancels the marriage, leaving her open to whatever marriage she would like. But it's a complete annulment of the marriage. So if that's that, you could see that this is a heck of a lot better than orphanages from all points of view. So in any event, what we have over here, therefore, the entire discussion of miyun is a discussion about a derabbanan. And what we need to think about is the miyun in the yavam and what that could possibly mean in terms of its impact on the zika. So let us get now to Rav Lili Bar Mamal, Omar Mar Ukva, Omar Shmuel. This is where we got up to in having completed the rias to yesterday's discussion. That was the second time that we completed them, actually. So we're now five lines up from the middle of the page. And we have Omar Rav Lili Bar Mamal, Omar Mar Ukva, Omar Shmuel. The tzara of a mima'enet is asura. So if we have a case where there are two women that fell to Yibum, so then even though this woman is a Gedola, normally married and everything else, the very fact that her tzara was a Kitana who was mima'enet, and I don't know, I mean, there was nothing over here that had to do with Erava. There was no Erava at all. This is an absolutely wild halacha. If she hadn't been mima'enet, so then the Yavam would have been able to marry the Tzara, would have been chayev to marry the Tzara. That's crazy. So because the Kitana was mima'enet, so therefore you cannot marry the Tzara. It's like, what are we talking about over here? So first of all, what exactly did Shmuel mean that Rav Lili Bar Mamal was quoting basically in the end of Shmuel's halacha? Who is Asura? Is Asura, rather, to this Tzara? Is it that the brothers of the one that she was mima'enet in, is she actually going to Asur all of the brothers? I mean, if the one who was mima'enes is still mutter, even according to Shmuel, how could the Tzara be Asura? That's crazy. The Omar Shmuel, let's say a Yavama was mima'enet to one of the brothers. So she ended up not being mima'enes to her husband. She says, when the Yavam comes to be mi'abe, I don't like this guy. So she was mima'enes to the Yavam. There's four other brothers. Can the other brothers, besides the one that she says she doesn't like, can the other brothers be mi'abe her? Yes. Mi'ana b'zeh, muteret b'zeh. The Shmuel himself, who's the source of the halacha, says, so Tzara, tell me, boy, if she herself is permitted over here, so why wouldn't the Tzara be permitted? That doesn't make any sense. So Shmuel must have meant that the Tzara was Asura, dafka to the Yavam, that this Kitana said, I don't like. So even though she's Muteris to all of the other brothers, this one, she's not allowed to marry. Now, let's try to understand how that could possibly be logical. Maishna mima'enet. The Shar Yalach, Gavi, I think you'll be able to understand this even if you're right side up. I mean, I know that the blood going to your head helps a little bit, but this is certainly okay. So thank you, because I was getting dizzy. So anyway, what exactly is the logic? Tell me, what is the logic that the Mama Enes is mutera to the Achim? I don't understand the logic why she's asura to him, but why is she definitely not the same to the other brothers that she is to the brother she was Mama Enes in? Well, because she has no connection to them. She never did anything to them. She never spoke to them. Why should she be asura? That's crazy. I mean, it's crazy enough that she's asura to the one she was Mama Enes in. Okay, I understand that. It's sort of like a cancellation of the Yibum or the connection between them, whatever. But why is she mutera to all of the others? Because basically, she was never married to their brother once she ends up doing Mian. So it must be because, why should she be? We don't see any connection between them. Well, then the same thing should be true of the Tzara. The Tzara of the one, she might have been, I don't know, she might have been living in a completely different continent. I mean, what in the world does the act of the child who is Mema Enet have to do with the Tzara? If the child herself can marry the other brothers, then why can't the Tzara marry any of the brothers, even including the one that she was Mema Enes in? This is crazy. I mean, it's exactly the same logic. So Tzara Nami Lo Avdo Bo Maisa, there was no connection between the Tzara and any of the brothers, even including this one that did the she had done the Mian to. Says the Gemara, the most wild gezera. This is a gezera. Mishum tzarat bito mima enet. In the event that a man's own daughter fell to him b'yibum, and she was mima enet. Let's say there's two approaches here, but let's take the normal approach here among the Rishonim. Let's say she was mima'enet in him. So what would be the halacha over there? If it was his own daughter, which doesn't really make any sense because his own daughter can't fall to Yibum to him, right? Because anyway, she is Petura from Yibum. But she could cancel her marriage to her original husband who had died, who was the brother of the father, and then it would turn out that the Tzara at least would be Muteret. Because if she had been Mima Enet before he died, so then there would never have been anything that looked like a Tzara at Erva. But let's talk about a case where the daughter was Mima Enet. And in that case, you would not be allowed to marry the Tzara. So this might be confused with that. Wait a minute. What do you mean you can't marry the Tzara? On the contrary, the Tzara of Bito Mima Enet is the very case that our Mishnah talks about. Vatzan kulani made to any of the Arayas, where Omianu, if they had been Mima Enet in him, then the Tzara is mutter. For God's sake, what is going on over here? What do you think that means? The Mian Abiman, who did she give the Mian to? You think it means that she was Mima Enes to her husband before he died? Can't mean that. Ilema de Mian Abibal, Hainu Grusha. Wouldn't that be exactly the same case as a Grusha? I mean, it's even better than a Grusha. A Grusha at least was married. A Mima Enet completely uproots the condition from the beginning and annuls the marriage entirely. So therefore, the Mishnah must be referring to a case where this child was Mima Enet to the Yavam after the husband dies. And it says Beferish in the Mishnah that the Tzora is Muteret. So you see that any Erva, which includes all of the 15 Ervas, which includes his daughter, so then it says that Tzora is Muteret. How is Shmuel coming along to argue on the Mishnah? No. The Mishnah is not talking about that she was Mima Enes to the Yavam. The Mishnah is talking about that she was Mima Enes to the Baal. And you'll say, so why do you need to even say that? Isn't that a divorce? Yes, it is a divorce. But that's the derech of the Tana, is to speak out the various modalities. If one modality of removing the Kedushin is literal divorce, there's another modality that you should be sensitive to, which is Mion. It doesn't mean that it's a Mion to the Yavam, but Enochinami. If she waited until the husband had already died and then she's mima'enet because she doesn't like the Yovam, then the din is that the Tzara Sabbat is also Asura. Why? But that's crazy. I mean, look, think about this. When she was mima'enet on her husband, before his death, why is there no problem on the Tzara's now taking Yibum? Because she had annulled the marriage, right? Because she was akrinu l'nisuin. But when she does that act to the Yovam, that's exactly what she's doing, darn it. You can't be mema'enet directly to a Yovam, because how can you walk out on the Zika? It doesn't even make sense. If there really were Zika over here, midiraisa, you can't say, I don't like him. The only reason you say, I don't like him, is because you're being oiker, the makor of the Zika. The makor of the Zika is the original marriage. And the original marriage was a derabanan. So memela, you're going ahead and you're saying, okay, so now I'm being oiker. I never liked my husband. You know what? That's what it boils down to. I never wanted to get involved in a marriage that would throw me in front of this jerk, the Yavan. So therefore, I'm walking out on the marriage. So what's wrong with that? So that means that if the mian in a Yavam works, it works because it basically uprooted the original marriage, milachatchila, and therefore, why is it worse to be mima'enet in a Yavam, and that would make the Tzara Asura? That makes no sense. So kibiyavam, miyano biyavam nami, nisu'in kamoi ka'akar. She's uprooting the original marriage. So I don't understand what Shmuel is doing over here. The Mishnah says, beferish, that if a ketana is mima'enet and she was an erva, then having annulled the original marriage that put her into this matzav of yibum, she basically allows the tzara to get married because she never felt a yibum. That's all. Just as an aside, I mentioned to you that she went ahead and was mima'enet in the father. Now, that's not necessarily what it means, but we'll talk about that. Could be she was, according to some Rishonim, she was mima'enet in any of the brothers. This would still be true. But let's see why. Answers the Gemara, the reason that we answer a Tzara's Habat is because of the same reason of Rami Bar Yecheskel. Now, here's the situation with Rami Bar Yecheskel. The Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel. Suppose a Ktana is mima'enet to her husband. And now, 5 years later, she falls in love with her husband's father. Can she marry her husband's father? Nothing to do with Yibum. Nothing to do with Yibum. Can she marry her husband's father? Yes, she can marry her husband's father. Why? Because she was never married to his son. She's not a daughter-in-law, and she never was a daughter-in-law. That's the point of Mion. Mion completely annuls the original marriage. But what happens if her husband died, and now she was mima'enet in the brother of her husband? Then she can never marry the father. What? Why? Does that make sense? There's only one way that makes sense, and that is that since she needed to be mima'enet in this brother, it looked like she was married at that moment. So misha'at nefila, the moment that she fell to Yibum, that was mechayev her to respond to the Yibum by doing miyun, it looked like she was married to the guy seriously. And at that moment, she looks like a real daughter-in-law. And since she looks like a real daughter-in-law, there is going to be a mistake that people make. And the mistake that people make is people don't know how this works. They don't understand that the miyun in the Yavam doesn't make any sense in terms of Zika, and that it means that she was uprooting the original marriage. They think that the same way that you can be mamayan in a husband, you can be mamayan in a yavam. That's what they think. So therefore, in their minds, if a child was mima'enet to her husband, they understand perfectly well why she is allowed to go ahead and marry her father-in-law, because she was never married to the son. But when she never gave miyun to the son, and she needed to give miyun to the yavam, so people say, wait a minute, why did she have to give miyun to the yavam? Apparently because she really was a yavama, because she really had been married to that first brother. But if she was married to that first brother, how could she marry her father, his father? She's his daughter-in-law. Because of that, people's confusion, then that came along now the Gezerah of Rami Bar Yecheskel, who said she's clearly Asura under those circumstances. Now, that same logic would apply to Tzoras Bito Mima Enet. Because since at the time of Shas Nefila, Hochanami, so in a case where your own daughter would fall to Yibam, to the father, and then she goes ahead and is Mima Enet. Now, that's a question among the Rishonim, whether it means she was Mima Enet in the father or was Mima Enet in any of the brothers. Because Bepashta, she doesn't, the concept of Mima Enet in the father where a daughter would never fall by Yibam doesn't make sense. You're just going through emotions by being Mima Enet. So in that sense, it looks like a joke. That's a machlokas Rishonim. The Ritva understands that we're talking about that she was mamish mima enet in the father herself. Other Rishonim say she was mima enet in any of the brothers. But the bottom line is that the need for Yibum, the need for miyun, makes it look like the Yibum was a real chiyuv. And because of that, she appears to be an honest to goodness tzorat bito. And therefore, we can't let her get married because people will think that a real tzorat bito can go ahead and actually get Yibum. That would be the reason. So you'll say, but isn't the whole Gezerah in the first place, the fact that there's an Isser on the Tzara, isn't that a Darabonan? And wouldn't this be a Gezerah to a Gezerah? That we're going to, because of the fact that people will view Miyun as a real marriage, so therefore we're going to be Gozer, that any Mima Enet in the world where there's not even a relationship is considered to be ipso facto Asering the Tzara. I mean, I think it's a little wild. We'll have to say, as the Rishonim do, that it's Kula Choda Gezerah. Once people get confused, and we see from here that the Gemara indeed considers Yavamas to be confusing. Once people get confused by what the meaning is of the relationship of Tzara and Erava and Miyun, they can make the most ridiculous errors. So over here, error number one is thinking that there's such a concept of Miyun in a Yavam, when it really only looks like Miyun in the Yavam, but it's really a Miyun in the original relationship. And concept number two that they may confuse this is that they may think that Miyun is somehow a thing that is always mutter in the Tzara, and therefore, even in the case of the Tzara's Habat, they would allow the Tzara to get married, which would not be a big problem. It would only be an Issur Darabanan anyway. But because that is so close in their mind to the idea of Miyun per se, so the Rabbanan asered both. So this is a very far-fetched sounding kind of Gezerah, but it clearly is entirely a Gezerah. Now let's talk about the much more fundamental case. And that's the case of the Islanders. What happens if the wife turns out to be an Islanders? Now, remember, in the Mishnah, it said that in all cases where the brother's, the deceased brother's wife was discovered to be an Islanders, then that would mean that there was no problem of Tzoras Erva because she ended up, because what? Now, if you remember when we learned the Mishnah, we said there's two ways to understand that because. One is that if she was discovered to be an islandess, then our assumption is that the brother did not marry her with the consideration of her being an islandess. So just like if somebody buys an automobile that is being advertised as an electric automobile and it turns out to be gas-powered, does not have to return the automobile. The sale is ipso facto canceled. It's called a mekach ta'ut. This was not what I set out to buy. The same thing is true of a normal buying, so to speak, of a kedushin of a woman, in which the assumption is that buying that woman for kedushin was related to reproduction. If she cannot reproduce, then you wouldn't have bought her as a wife. And therefore, it's a cancellation of the Kiddushin. And so it's the same thing as it now being clear that there never was a marriage. That's one approach. And so therefore, obviously, that Sarah did not fall together with her because she was never, ever married to the brother, even if this discovery of her status takes place a year after the death of the brother, when she's now old enough, and now it turns out that she's really an islandess and she never reached puberty. Fine. That's one way of understanding the Mishnah, but there's another way of understanding the Mishnah. The other way of understanding the Mishnah is that if the brother said, I love this little girl, and the fact that she cannot reproduce doesn't bother me. I can always marry someone else to have kids, but I want this girl as my wife. So then, will she ever fall to Yibam? No, because the Torah specifies in terms of Yibam that she has to be able to reproduce, because it says, Abachor Asher Teled. So Asher Teled means she is going to give birth. What if she can't be Asher Teled? Then the whole parsha of Yibam would not apply. So then that means that this islandess never falls to Yibam. If she doesn't fall to Yibam, can she pater the tzara? Now here we get into a fascinating issue. And this was the thing that we were talking about all along. If she doesn't fall to Yibam, what is her status to the brothers? She is an Eishes Ach Shelo B'Mokom Mitzvah, correct? So if she's an Eishes Ach Shelo B'Mokom Mitzvah, then she is one of the Arayas. She's the equivalent of Eishes Ach Shelo Haya B'Olamo, right? Eishes Ach Shelo Haya B'Olamo is the Isser of Eishes Ach per se, which potters her tzora from Yibam. If she falls now from another brother, who was Ba'olamo, correct? Are we thinking clearly, gentlemen? Okay, so then the Tsaras Islandess should be Asura Midiraisa, because she is an Asish Ach Shaloba Makamitzvah. So then that would give us actually another one of the 15 Arayas that now needs to be taken into consideration. She becomes a classic Tzaras Erva because what she is a Tzara of the Tzara, essentially. Because why is a Tzara of a Tzara Asura? Because the Tzara was Asura since she was an Eishes Ach Shelo B'Mokom Mitzvah first time around. So now that she falls second time around, she is an Erva called Eishes Ach who can make her own Tzara, which is called a Tzara's Tzara. So an islandess is the equivalent of a Tzara who can now make a Tzara's Tzara, which is the original Tzara. I'm doing this on purpose. You can see the consistency of the way we view the Isser of Eishes Ach in terms of the Isser of Tzara. Am I being clear or am I being confusing? I see everybody's eyes seem to be going in circles here. Perfectly clear, right, Rich? Perfectly clear. Richie, that's just your sonar screen. And don't have the eyes going in circles when you look at me. Well, talk to me and tell me what the problem is.
I don't understand what a Sora is.
You know what a normal Sora is from the Mishnah, right? Do you or don't you?
There's the one giving Yibam, and then there's the Tzara, who is the co-wife. So a co-wife to a co-wife?
Oh, Richie.
Three of them.
I said in the first Mishnah, we've got to get these concepts clear now, not wait till 13 pages later, for God's sake.
I might have been sleeping.
Okay. One last time, and this time you're paying attention.
Paying attention.
Okay. So now, the woman who is the Tzora, the co-wife of the Erva, she is not going to get Yibam, because the Torah said, we don't give Yibam Litzror, right? Okay. But there are other brothers to whom she's completely unrelated, because her co-wife was not related to them. So she went ahead and got Yibam from one of the other brothers. Fine. That brother had another wife from before, from after, whatever. Another 10 wives. We might as well pique your interest here, right? So he had a lot of, maybe not, maybe only one is bad enough. Okay. So this brother had another wife. Now this brother dies. So now the tzara falls to the other brother that previously was unable to marry her because she was the tzara of an erva. Now she's falling to him from the second brother. But she's still Petura because she was still a tzara's erva from the first brother, right? But how about her tzara? How about the second brother's other wife? Can she get Yibam? No. Because she's the tzara of a tzara. Why can she not get Yibam? Because the tzara herself remains an Eishes Ach from the first brother where there was no mitzvah of Yibam. Since that isn't removed, now the second tzara is now the tzara of that erva, who before we just called it tzara, but it was now an erva herself. Because wherever a brother's wife falls to Yibam, you can't do Yibam, then she is a brother's wife, Shaloba Mokum Yibam. And therefore, an islandish should be the same thing, because the islandish falls to Yibam, and you can't be Miyabim her. Even if the brother loved her, the Torah says Yibam is only possible where she can reproduce, and she can bring forth more life, genetic life, of that original brother. Richard. Oh, Sir Richard, you can give more than 15 seconds of concentration. I know that Sesame Street really draws you. Okay. All right. So now back to our sugya. So now Rav Asi comes along and says that tzara of an islandit is asura. Why? Because since it says in the Torah, Vahayah b'chor asher teleid, that means that if there cannot be a teleid, remember that we understand that that doesn't mean what we think it means. It doesn't mean the first child to be born from this new union is to be called al shem achiv hamet. We reinterpreted that pasuk, right? And we said that basically this pasuk begins, so to speak, with the pasuk before, L'kacholo li'isha v'yibma, the Hayah HaBechor is connected. Rabbi Hayah HaBechor means the oldest of the brothers is the one that's supposed to do the Yibam. And then when it says Asher Teled, means assuming this brother should do the Yibam, assuming Asher Teled, that the widow is going to be able to be Teled. So that means that there is a Yavama who can have children. But if the widow herself cannot be Asher Teled, so then she's not included because there can't be a Yokum al Shem Achiv Hamet. But if she is Teled, then Yokum al Shem Achiv Hamet. That's how Chazal understood the pasuk, which is different from the way that it seems to read. But in any event, it's certainly clear that the point of this whole thing is the salvation of the brother's genes, right? As close as possible to his own genetic inheritance. So therefore, an island in She'ena Yoledet is excluded from this halacha. Asked Rav Seish, and what about the Mishnah that we're going to have later on? The Mishnah says that if you have three brothers, Shlosha Achim, and these three brothers are married to three unrelated women, simple case. One of the brothers dies. And now a second brother, instead of doing Yibam, does Ma'amar. Have I discussed Ma'amar? Then let's discuss it now. The Rabbanan created, we did discuss it, but okay. The Rabbanan created a concept called Ma'amar. This concept is that because of the rawness of the relationship of a Yavama to a Yavam, in which basically he is allowed to take her and even force himself upon her, we create a mechanism whereby we soften the impact of that given relationship, and we say, as any woman would clearly appreciate, if you're going to give yibum to this woman, treat her like a kala. Give her a ring. Treat her like you would any other woman. And say to her, Hareyat mekudeshet li betabat zu. Yes, we understand that the Torah has given you rights to go and rape her, but sorry, you're not allowed to do that. You have to go ahead and give her a kiddushin the way you would give any woman. Now, does that kiddushin do anything? No, not midiraisa. But midirabbanan, it does. And what it does is, if one of the brothers will give this ma'amar to one of the women, that messes things up for everybody else. Because since midirabbanan, there is a concept called the erisin of yibum, then this means that there's a semi-yibum relationship that doesn't allow the other brothers to break that relationship because of the rabbanan kedushin that exists here. So therefore, if one of the brothers goes ahead and gives ma'amar, so then that was the first step to taking the woman as a yavama. But he died before he was able to consummate his new marriage, which was actually yibum. Now what happens? What happens is that the third brother, the surviving brother, is faced with a strange situation. He still would have needed to do yibum because of the first brother's death, except that that yibum was sort of messed up for him by the second brother's ma'amar, because now she's like married to the second brother. But now he has to take care of this yavama as if she's married to the second brother. But that's only a derabbanan. So it turns out that this guy is facing a multiple yibum. He has to be miyabem the same woman because of her first husband's death. And he also has to be miyabem her because of her second husband's death. Very strange situation. Does that matter? Yes, it does. Hare elu chotzot velo mityabmot. Basically, you cannot do anything but yibum in this, but chalitza in this case. Why? Because since the Torah says, "Umet echad mehem, ki yeshvu achim yachtav, umet echad mehem," one brother dies, but over here two brothers died, and they had, both of them had a zika, one derabbanan and one deraisa. And therefore we say, Misha alea zikat yavam echad, velo zikat shnei yavamim. And over here, even though midiraisa ma'amar doesn't even exist, but midirabbanan, she is basically coming from two separate brothers. Now, obviously, they are actually, she is actually not coming from two different brothers. But nonetheless, the halacha is over here that he cannot do actually a yibum. He can only do a chalitza, because according to the Rabbanan, there exists on them a actual zika. Fine. Now, the truth is that the Isser would apply over here both to the Rabbanan wife and to her tzara, who is his Deoraisa wife. So now that would mean that the second brother, we always call the second brother Shimon, and the original deceased brother Reuven, and now we call the third brother Levi. So Levi cannot do a yibum with either of the wives that fall to him, not the one that had the first zika of yibum, and not the one who was married at the same time. Now later on, we're going to explain why we assert the tzara. Fine, but right now let's take that for granted. So this is not important to us right now, except for the following diuk, which is the question that we're asking on the assertion that there's a din of a tzoras islandess. And here are the words that are confusing. Omer of Yosef, this strange case that Shimon, the second brother's wife, does not get yibum, is the concept of a tzoras eshes ach me'av, and she is a normal, perfectly kosher woman to get Yibam. And the only reason she doesn't get Yibam is by the fact that she fell to Yibam, which is nuts, said Rabbi Yosef. We never find anything else like this. Shalom atzinu b'chola Torah kula kagon zot. We find no other case similar to this, because basically Reuven's wife is a perfect example of the mitzvah of Yibam. He is a brother from a father who was married, and just because she fell to Yibam, in this case from two brothers, it's that Isra falling to Yibam that makes the Yibam even of the real wife of Shimon, not the Darabonan wife because of the mama. The real wife of Shimon is considered to be the Tzora of an Eshet Ach, and she's Asura because she falls to Yibam at Shalom Babakam Mitzvah. That's what it boils down to. Why can I not marry the wife of Shimon that was never married to Reuven? Because Shimon is also married to Reuven's wife, Bina Rabbanan, with a Ma'amar. And because of that, you cannot even do Yibam to his real wife that he was married to before Reuven even died. Now you see how similar this is to the case of the Yavam, of the Islanders, right? The Islanders has fallen to Yibam, and she's a classic, her Tzara is a classic case of a Yavama. Her Tzara is a normal wife who was married to the brother from the father. The main case that the Torah says is Yibam, but because there was a woman there that you could not be miyabim, namely the islandess, and why could you not be miyabim? For another total reason, because she's an islandess. And it says Asher Tele. Hey, but that's exactly this case. There's another woman there that you can't marry. Why can't you marry? Because it says Echad Beham, Umet Echad Beham. So here you can't marry. Of course, it's only Darabanan, but nonetheless, we're saying, since it says Echad Beham, you can't marry. Ah, so she falls to Yibam and you can't marry her. And it's only because she fell to Yibam that you can't marry her. Isn't that nuts, says Rabbi Yosef? To which we say, wait a minute, what do you mean? This is the case and there's no other case like that. We just had the case of an islandess. It's exactly the same case. She should have fallen to Yibam, but because there was some external reason that she happened to be married to a guy who was also married to an islandess. So it's exactly the same case. And Rabbi Yosef says, this is the only case. So why is it the only case? What's not the case? Lav Lamute Tsaras Islanders? Isn't that what he's saying? That case is definitely not considered to be Asura Liyavim. That's what he's saying. So how could Rabasi say that she's Asura Liyavim? Man, oh man. Beautiful deer, right? Says the Gemara, no. No, but yes. No, it's not a contradiction to Rabasi. And yes, it does mean Tzoras Islanders. Yes, that part is right. But when he said, this is the only case we have like this, what it means is, this is the only case where the Iser Nefila was Gerimla, that she's Asura to be Miyabem, and she's only Mutter for Chalitza and Tsarataboy Chalitza. But the case of an Islanders doesn't even need chalitza. That's the point. Why? Because the case of the islanders is a diraisa, and this is a case of mama, which is only rabbanan. So the islanders are afilu chalitza lo boy. My time, oh, how diraisa, how the rabbanan. Ha ha! Amazing. Now, what about the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, kula mi meso mi anu shenim tzu islanit. Soratei mutarot. Doesn't it say beferish that the tzor of an islanders is mutter? No, for God's sake, it's two different cases. Rav Asi was talking about a case where the brother who died knew she was an islandess and he wanted to marry her, and he said, I want her anyway. The Mishnah's talking about Shalom Yikirba. So therefore, the marriage was annulled because of Mekachtos. If it's annulled, then it's the same as the case of Girsha or the Memaenet. What's the comparison? And by the way, can't you read? Read the Mishnah carefully. Dei Kanami. What does the Mishnah say? Nimtzu. Look at Anishaha, you islandese. Nimtzu. If she turned out, it was discovered later that she was an islandese. Then and only then do we say that the tzara is mitya bemet. But if she was known she was an islandess, then that wouldn't be true. Why would the Mishnah have to say nimtzu? Because the Mishnah is saying, Rav Asi is right. If we knew she was an islandess, then the tzara would not be mitya bemet. Beautiful. Ha ha. Omar Rava, look, I understand that you've made it look good, but we do not paskin this halacha at all, okay? The halacha is the tzara of an islandess is muteret, even if he did know that she was an islandess. And I don't care, even if it was tzara's bito islandess and this whole jazz about it looked like she was a daughter-in-law from the time that she fell, blah, blah, blah. I don't buy into any of that stuff. It's very far-fetched. Now, as far as why, I mean, what about the beautiful diak in the Mishnah? The Mishnah said shenimtzu. It didn't say shahoyu. I mean, gosh, here we were celebrating that diak, and now you're telling me it doesn't mean anything. You know what? Change it to read shahoyu. So therefore, that's the end of that. So now, when Ravin came along and made the Yerida, the Bavel, he said, Arvin that Reb Yochanan Paskin. I don't care whether we're talking about a tzarat mima enet. I don't care whether we're talking about a tzaras islandis. All of these cases are kulon mutarot. So basically, he in fact was actually matir all of these cases of tzaras ma'aser grishos. So all the cases that we had originally talked about, tzaras mima enes, Tzoras Island is all such cases, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we did not paskin. Fine. Now, the question is, what about that next piece in the Mishnah? Now, there's something missing here, but you'll notice that Rabbi Yochanan didn't say anything about a Tzoras Soita, which Rav had said that she actually is potter even from Chalita because he used the word Tuma. But there's a piece missing. And that is that you have to put in, as the Rashash says, you have to put in I ataya cholo mar bechamoto ve'im chamoto, which was the closing words of the Mishnah. You cannot say that they were an islandess or that they were ketanot, that were memanot, because how could she be an islandess if she had a child, which is your wife? So that's ridiculous. And how could she be a child if she couldn't have been mima enet after she had your wife, could she? Well, maybe yes. And then, says the Gemara, Tony Rav Bibi, Kameda Rav Nachman, there are three women who use contraceptives. Now, the machlokas is who must use contraceptives or who are allowed to use contraceptives. Now, that's a big machlokas. We'll see what this is dependent on. What contraceptives are we talking about over here? So this is called a moch. Now the question is what a moch actually means. So a moch is some type of dam that prevents the entry of sperm into the vagina, into the womb. And that is the simple meaning of moch. Would it also include a condom? That's a big question. The Achiezer Paschal, that it even includes condoms. But everybody else says it doesn't include condoms. The Peskim, anyway, almost all the Peskim disagree with the Achiezer because that's too direct. And in fact, the problem over here is what is the issue? Now, Rashi is learning that what we're talking about, a moch, which is, I forgot what they call that today. What's the contraceptive that is the moch?
A diaphragm.
Yeah, a diaphragm type of thing, exactly. Right. So the question is like this. Are we talking about a literal moch? Tosfos learns we're talking about a wad of cloth that is used to soak up the semen after intercourse, because he said, if we're talking about a diaphragm, so then that would mean that basically ejaculation does not take place in the woman. So that would just be like destroying your sperm, which is usher. So it's got to be talking about the question about whether the woman is allowed to destroy sperm. So Tosus understands that the issue is, what is the problem of destroying sperm? It's respect for your chiyuv of reproduction. So obviously you're not always going to be using sperm for reproduction. I mean, your wife, whether you may be postmenopausal or an islandist or whatever. But because of the overall sense of the meaning of sperm for production, so therefore it's inappropriate to destroy it. But a woman is not chayevus in reproduction because she's ptura from pruravu. So she doesn't have to respect sperm. So she can do whatever she wants. This is the way Tosfos understands it. And therefore it's talking about after intercourse. But before, that would be a problem of the man destroying sperm because he's putting it somewhere else where it doesn't belong. That would be the problem of the condom also. Now, Lamaisa, we end up paskening like Rashi, almost all of the poskim like Rashi that we are talking about, not like the way that Tosfos understands it, but rather we literally mean that the destruction of, not as Tosfos says, an ex post facto, we literally mean the question of whether you're allowed to put a diaphragm in. But then the other question would be, does this mean that you have to use contraception, or does it mean that you can use a contraception? So we'll see what this is dependent on. This is another machlokas. What are the three cases that you must or may use a moch? Ketana, if she is a ketana, and this is where we get into this sugya in our Mishnah, because if a ketana needs a moch, then that seems to be saying that a ketana could get pregnant, and if she could get pregnant, then why could your mother-in-law not be a ketana, who could then be mima enet? That's basically where we're headed over here, right? Okay, but the three cases are, she could be a ketana, she could be pregnant, or she could be nursing. The ketana, we want her to use contraception, because what if she gets pregnant and she can't handle the pregnancy because she's too young, and she may end up dying because of the stress on her body to be maintaining a pregnancy when she really doesn't have the full facilities to do so. Now, mu'uberet, because we're afraid the rare circumstances where she could become pregnant again. And if she gets pregnant again, then the growth of a second fetus might actually damage the original fetus. This is a very interesting case where, this was many years ago, there was close to 50 years ago. It was also actually a Time magazine article about exactly a case like this and about how rare it is to become pregnant for a second time. Normally, you don't have ovulation. And this was an actual case where this happened. But it's very far-fetched, which is why the Rabbanan are going to argue, because we don't usually make these kind of considerations for far-fetched cases. Or if she is nursing. Now, that's already a serious concern. If she's nursing and she gets pregnant, now that can easily ruin her milk. The child will refuse to nurse. And in those days, not having a nursing mother is a sakonis nefashis for the child. Nowadays, we have so many substitutes that we can adjust things so that a child can survive without nursing. But it used to be shamatigmo binaviyamot. The child could easily die by not having a suitable nursing mother or replacement. Now, when we say that she's a ketana and that she has to use contraceptives or can use contraceptives, that is what age? That's from the age of 11 years old and up. You know, all of this modern stuff, do you give contraceptives to children and so on? I mean, it's just incredible how meaningless all of this is. But okay, so if she's 11 years old, then you have to make sure that she has contraceptives or that it would be mutter to use contraceptives. But if she's less than that, or if she's more than that, then this is not a problem. So only from the age of 11 until the age of 12. Pochot mikan, she won't get pregnant. Yeter al kain, she can handle the pregnancy. So therefore, she could just have normal intercourse without worrying about it. Mishameshet kedarkava holechet, divrei Rabbi Meir. The Chachomim say, in all cases, you do not have to worry about normal sex. Why? Because how likely it is that there's going to be a big problem over here? It's very unlikely. It's unlikely that if she's so young, she's going to get pregnant. Unlikely that she's going to die. Unlikely that the woman's going to lose her milk. It used to be, by the way, it isn't anymore. This was the Psak of Ravenkin, who pointed out that because of the breakdown, and this was a breakdown that only took place about 50 years ago. And before that, there never was a need for contraception for 2 years after a birth, because there was normal hormonal interference in births. So when I was a kid, nobody had a child less than 2 years after a previous child, despite the fact that contraceptives weren't even invented. I mean, certainly not the modern contraceptives. But that was because, nobody knows exactly why, it probably has to do with nutrition or whatever, but there has been a complete breakdown in normal hormonal functioning, so that now there can be ovulation right after a birth. So as Ravenkin Paskin, brilliant psak, that there never was a time that people were willing to endanger themselves by getting pregnant less than 2 years after a delivery. And therefore, well, he was going like the Shita that you have to use contraceptives, but therefore you would have to use contraceptives according to those Shitas, because it would be a sakonis nefashis that was never a dash beirabim, which we'll discuss in a moment what dash beirabim means. So that the current frum response of the more kids, the faster, the better, is certainly not something that is obviously true lahalacha, that's for sure. But what's nogea, our sugya, so the Rabbanan say, there's not a problem, because if there's an issue, min hashamayim yirachamu, God will handle it. You have a right to say God will handle it, only if you're stupid. But since it says, shomer psoyim Hashem, God takes care of the simple, when you're dealing with something that people don't normally think about, God indeed takes care of the simple. So that's called dash beirabim. If it's something that people think is normal and acceptable and they're not aware of the risks, they're called ptaim. And shomer ptaim Hashem. Now the question between the machlokas rishonim is, does shomer ptaim mean you have to allow God to take care of the simple? Or does shomer ptaim mean you're allowed to have God take care of the simple, but you simply don't have to, certainly don't have to? An interesting case would be if it's a sunny day and you're in a Beit HaKnesset with windows. Do you make a Brit Milah? You're not allowed to break a Brit Milah in the sun. So now the question is whether Yuma De'iva Kula Shimsha, if it's a cloudy day, and there's no particular place where you can get away from the sun, because the halakha, according to the Gemara, is the dispersion of light on a cloudy day means that the light is dispersed equally all over. So there's no shadow. And therefore, you're not allowed to give a Brit Milah. So do you have a right, if you are a parent who says, listen, I'm aware that this is a sakana and I don't want to take the risk, can you not do the Brit Milah, even though it's the eighth day? This would be one of the considerations. Obviously, the contraception issue is a consideration. So this is another issue. Can you smoke cigarettes? Certainly today, that's not a dash. I mean, I don't know. Maybe even the amount of people that still smoke are called dash beirabim. But certainly you're not a petty. Everybody is well aware of the dangers of smoking. And to say God will take care of me is pretty dumb. So I'm not, you know, there's many poskim that say it's absolutely yisur d'oraisa to smoke because there is no shomer psoyim Hashem. But anyway, this is the sugya where all of these issues are discussed. Now, here's the reason that we brought this up. Since it says maybe she'll get pregnant and maybe she'll die, that means that maybe she'll get pregnant and maybe she won't die. And if that's the case, apparently there are children who get pregnant and don't die. But if that's the case, then your mother-in-law may have been one of those children who got pregnant with your wife, and then she was Mima Enes because she's still a Ketana. So why does the Mishnah say you could never say that your mother-in-law was Bima Enet? You could. It says in the Mishnah, Yata Yocholomar b'chamoto ve'im chamoto ve'im chamiv shenimtzu ailonit o she'mianu. I understand the ailonit part, but I don't understand the miano. We'll have to change the braisa. Instead of saying Shema titaber v'shema tamut, read Shema titamer v'tamut. The Omar Rabbi Barlevoy said, look, this is the way it is in nature. There is a gvul to this. Before the 11th year birthday, she doesn't get pregnant. During the year between 11 and 12, she does get pregnant, but she'll die and the fetus will die. And after the 12th year birthday, so then she'll get pregnant. She could get pregnant and both of them can live perfectly well. So according to him, it's true what the Mishnah says. She'll never, your mother-in-law couldn't be a Mina. But that's not true because Rabbi Bar Shmuel has a Braisa. And the Braisa says, you can't say that Chamotor, Im Chamotor, Im Chamiv. I'm sorry I'm going on so long, but I figured it's an interesting sugya. You'd like to learn it. And you know what the heck? I don't want to get behind again. So you can't say, this was like a very fundamental switchover. So you needed to hear clearly. Take a look. Even Sir Richard finally gets clear what a Sara is and how it relates to an island is. Sure, he wants to kill me. But what can you do? If Richie's ready to put up an iris, Ira's really ready to kill me. I mean, look at that face. Oh, my God. I hope Zoom keeps Richie and Ira apart because they're getting closer and closer on my screen here. Anyway, so it says over there, the reason that you can't say that they were Miano is because they already gave birth. Why does it say they already gave birth? It should say because they are basically Kitanim, not because they gave birth. It should have said, because they are Gedolim. But it doesn't say that. What does that have to do with giving birth? Says the Gemara, you're right. Let's go back. It said, maybe she'll get pregnant. Maybe she'll die. Yes, it's only maybe. So then, if that's the case, so then how do we explain somebody who gave birth can't be Mima Enet? Omer of Safra, because Banim Hareyem Kesimanim. If somebody has children, then it's the equivalent of reaching puberty. And since it's the equivalent of reaching puberty, therefore you cannot give miyun, because you're already a gedela. And of course, others say, children are even better than puberty. Better in what sense? Lamay nafkamina, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you still can be mima in it until you're way ahead. And not only have reached puberty, but you have enough pubic hair that it's clearly evident from afar that you can notice black coloration around the genitals, yirba ha-shachor. But if she already had a baby, then that's even better. And that means that it's better than needing to wait for the right age. You don't even have to wait for the right age. Because even if you would hold, this is how Rashi understands, even if you would hold, that having signs of puberty in terms of pubic hair is not called pubic hair unless you're of the right age to have pubic hair. But having children is better even than signs of puberty. It is the meaning of puberty. And because of that, there's no problem. And you know, I'm sure, the funny part of this Gemara, you know, which is the fact that bas tchila simen yofel lebanim, right? So they would always tell a kelol guy who's been looking forward to having a son, you know, and he has a girl. Oy vavoy, what am I going to do with a girl? To tell him the Gemara says bas tchila simen yofel lebanim, because she helps and she raises them. The response always was that the problem is you're telling me simen yofel lebanim. But we say that bonim are adife misimanim. I don't want a simen. I want the bonim. Okay. So that's the joke of the Gemara. Okay, everybody. Shavua tov. Hinei el yeshua si. Eftach v'lo efchad.